Welcome to Distant Voices, a podcast presented by Willamette Week. Join us every Wednesday to hear members of the Willamette Week newsroom talk to Oregonians about how they are overcoming the pandemic. Come back on Saturdays to listen to Dive, a podcast hosted by me, Hank Sanders, that takes a look at the Willamette Week cover story and includes interviews with the biggest names in the state. You can enjoy more episodes of these podcasts on this channel and learn more about our work at wweek.com. Enjoy this episode of Distant Voices.
Hi there, my name is Shannon and I'm Willamette Week's Music and Visual Arts Editor. I'm here today with Mir McLaughlin, who is the Executive Director of Music Portland, which is a nonprofit that works to support the independent music scene here in Portland. Mira, how's it going today?
It's marvelous. It's marvelous.
I'm glad to hear it. I'm guessing part of the reason why is earlier this month, the city announced its proposed budget, which includes $100,000 for Music Portland, which is a first for the organization. So to start off, could you give us a quick breakdown of the main things that that money will be going towards?
Yeah, I think it's not just the first for my organization. It's the first in the history of Portland where city government acknowledged in two different ways, that our music, independent, popular, for-profit, you have to use finger quotes because everybody laughs when you think about profit, but that they're acknowledging that this is an important cultural and economic imperative for the city. And it really is kind of groundbreaking that they've stepped up in this way. And the other side of it is the film office that I know we can talk about, but it's a really dynamic change that holds a ton of promise for our future going forward, having that acknowledgement. We've been almost an entirely volunteer organization since we founded, we incorporated in late 2017 and we really launched in fall of 2018. So we're not quite 3 years old. And it has been through the efforts of an incredible group of people just giving their time to support and save our local music ecosystem. And so this money will give us the first sort of grounding to be able to expand our dedicated staff to do more for the music industry and to compensate some of those folks that have yet to see any sort of remuneration out of it. And our goal is, as much as possible, to limit that spending to half of this money so that the balance, hoping as much as $50,000, will be the first round for the Music Portland Artist Fund, that we will provide creative empowerment grants to local musicians to support their work. And, you know, because it really isn't supported by existing traditional arts and culture funding mechanisms because they weren't designed to do that. And so we're trying to create something that's never existed before in Portland and creating it as a sustaining and growing endowment against which we can make grants.
What do you think caused this shift and inspired the city to include this in the proposed budget? Do you think it was the pandemic and, you know, the way it made the industry so vulnerable so quick?
I think that, I mean, I want to give a whole bunch of credit to the Independent Venue Coalition here in Oregon and to NEVA. I think that those state-focused and national stories really brought to light the significance of the industry. I will also say, you know, I've been in City Hall when it was open 2 days a week, talking to city leaders, talking to staffers, constantly stimulating dialogue that says, you know, this is a culture, a cultural asset and an economic factor that isn't currently even acknowledged by the city. So I've been fighting for almost 3 years to get them to think this way. They made a big hop, though, I do think, because of what we've been through, acknowledging that artists have been completely shut out of performance opportunities and educating them to make sure that they understand that it isn't that you make a record and make $1 million. You know, you don't make the money you used to off of recorded music. So paid performance is that much more significant. And it really aligned us in our pitch to support venues but now they're recognizing that we need to support the artists and the music businesses as well.
Yeah, I'm curious, since a lot of the money would go towards the artist grant, you know, venues are now finally able to sell tickets and, you know, make some revenue for the first time in over a year. But how has that trickled down to local small independent artists yet? Has that really affected their realities yet?
No, not at all. I mean, the venues are still in a really, really tough spot, because they were able, through this incredible solidarity, standing together, providing data and advocating, and Music Portland worked to make sure that mixed use venues, bars and restaurants and things that have music, got the largest allocation in the country. I think it's still that. It was the earliest, certainly, for venue support of all types of venues in Portland. And then there was the state support. But venues are still in a tough spot because the governor will not give them a path forward to reopen. And because it takes 3-4 months in advance to book a schedule, what has normally happened is that local artists are the last ones to get plugged in. What I am appreciating that I'm hearing from a lot of venues, they're scrambling to try and figure out what tours are still going to be going, when they can reasonably open. They take risks every time they start ticketing a show, because it may fall to pieces. The governor may pull access, things can happen. I think it's making in them a stronger acknowledgement of the wealth of talent that's in Portland. And that, you know, even touring bands should be relying on local talent to help them introduce new audiences to their music. So I think that there may be some dynamic changes. Venues are not out of the woods. And we've got a couple of initiatives we'll be talking about publicly soon that align those things, align local music and local venues and local fans in an entirely new way that will support specifically music, musicians and the venues. I think they're really grateful that they have gotten this far, and it is in no small part to the commitment that was already shown by state leadership and city leadership to provide those life support grants, just to make sure they didn't just shut down at the very beginning, because there was no path forward for them. Now with the SVOG grant for the dedicated venues only, that is going to allow them to do a little bit more. But some of the challenges that they're facing that we're trying to make sure that we help them with, and all music businesses, is that if the state starts to reactivate the active job search requirement for unemployment benefits, a lot of the seasoned, the veteran and experienced venue employees that have been holding fire have to go out and find a job, because they're going to lose their unemployment benefits. And that's going to further damage the local music scene, because they can't, if the governor says they can open at 50%, which they can't do economically viable, and they can't rehire people yet because they're not given that assurance, it's a real threat, I think, existentially, one more time, for the venues to be able to continue to operate. So Music Portland will be releasing within the next couple of weeks a music job board that will allow venues to post jobs, music businesses to post jobs, to Music Portland membership. And those are the people that have raised their hands saying, yes, I am a music professional in Portland. And it gives them kind of a pre-qualified list, if you will. So if anybody is making some or all of their money from music, they should be a member of Music Portland, which is starts with a free profile. Takes about 2 minutes, but it'll put you in line with a lot of these kinds of things. The artist grant, the job board, industry directory, which is another thing we've done.
This is Aaron Mesh with Willamette Week. Today I'm talking to Dr. Jenny Liu at Portland State University. Dr. Liu is with the Toulon School of Urban Studies and Planning as a professor there. And perhaps more germane to the conversation we're having today, she's the assistant director of the Northwest Economic Research Center and serves on the Governor's Council of Economic Advisors. And those are important bona fides to bring up because today we're talking about a sort of strange twist in Oregon's economy that has been reported in the past few weeks, which is how many businesses say they're having trouble hiring, that the jobs market is soft and that they are finding it difficult to find employees. If you walk down the streets of Portland right now, you'll see plenty of sandwich boards offering incentives for people to come work. Yesterday I was walking down 23rd and saw a sandwich board advertising a $1,000 one-time bonus for anybody who wanted to be a cook at McMenamin's, which leads to the question, everybody's been at home for a year and you would think would be eager for jobs. Why are businesses having such a hard time finding people? So, Dr. Liu, why are businesses having such a hard time finding people?
Yeah, I mean, it's a combination of a lot of different factors, I think. One of the really key reasons is that you're still seeing a lot of people really being hesitant about the level of risk that they might put themselves into at the specifically more customer-facing types of jobs or jobs where they have to go into people's homes. So exposing themselves to that kind of risk and potentially contracting the virus and bringing it home to family members who might be more vulnerable or who might not be able to get vaccinated is definitely still causing a lot of uncertainty for a good number of people, especially as they're watching, you know, all of the virus numbers going up and down throughout the year. Another really key factor I think that a lot of people have been talking about is really about the childcare situation. So I don't know if you saw that our Treasury Secretary, Janet Yellen, was talking about how more than 4 million women went out of the workforce during the last year because of unexpected childcare or family care situations. And a lot of those women, maybe about half of those women, haven't come back into the workforce, mainly because a lot of children are still not fully back in school. Childcare facilities are not open. And disproportionately, women are the ones that are thrust into caregiving positions in their families. And so anytime when there is uncertainty in that situation, it definitely disallows a large portion of our workforce to get back into work.
The conservative or business lobby talking point, certainly the Republican talking point, has been that the entitlement checks were just too large, that people were given a bailout by the feds and are staying home because it is because it is better compensated not to work than to work. Is that true? Is that a little true? Is that entirely nonsense?
I think that the amount and the duration of a lot of these unemployment benefits that were put into place were really there to help the people who are really the lowest earning portion of our population. And I think that is exactly what it's doing. It's helping the people who really need to take care of their families and really stay out of work for those reasons that are not because they are just earning so much that they're not getting back to work. I think that one thing that these unemployment benefits does allow for a little bit more of is the ability for people to, when they are looking for new jobs now, spend more time to find jobs that may be more suited to their abilities or their skills and their just general situation. And it also allows for people to look for jobs that might be higher paid and have a better balance in terms of living wage versus the risks that they're taking. So I don't necessarily agree with the viewpoint that the increase in benefits are keeping people out of work permanently.
Does anything stand out from you when you look at the Oregon jobs market that we haven't discussed yet?
Anything that stands out? I think Oregon is definitely seeing some changes in terms of the in and out migration of whether Oregon is becoming a more attractive location for workers to be throughout this pandemic when so many people are starting to work remotely and from home. So I think there's some changes in terms of whether people are migrating into Oregon or where they're being located in Oregon that I think will be really interesting to keep an eye out on.
Please tell me more about that. Does that mean that you're seeing more people come into Oregon or less people come into Oregon?
I don't have those numbers in front of me, so you'll have to refer to the state economist's numbers for that. But I think there's definitely some trends towards moving towards locations where you have easy access to natural amenities, especially during these pandemic times when people are really wanting to access easy outside natural recreation while still maintaining their distance from others. So I think a lot of locations are in here in Oregon are really seeing a lot of that. Places like Hood River, places like Bend are definitely seeing kind of an uptick in the number of people that are kind of attracted to those places, even more so than before.
Those are the places I want to live. I think it's a problem. I am concerned about this trend because I don't think to be able to afford an apartment.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that, you know, in these places, you can come outside and you see the mountains or you see the river. And that's really something that people find a lot of comfort in these kind of really uncertain times when everything is changing at such a rapid pace. That's kind of a constant that you can kind of rely on.
Does that change the job market in some way that people are looking for work that they can do remotely?
I think it does because it definitely triggers a little bit of a industrial sector transition between different types of jobs that can be done at home versus jobs that necessarily require people to be face-to-face with other people, face-to-face with coworkers and so on. And I think that's also one of the reasons why people are hesitant to get back into some of those service industry jobs is that interfacing with customers and really putting yourself out there.
So that's probably creating a kind of pressure, right? Like that there are some jobs that require personal interface with people who may or may not be wearing masks and may or may not be vaccinated at this point. And I'm asking you to speculate a little bit here, and I realize this, but I am asking you to speculate. Does it appear to you that those are the jobs that are having the hardest time finding people who want to do them?
Yes, I mean, I would definitely speculate so that any of these jobs that require a higher risk profile are definitely going to be the jobs that are going to have a higher difficulty in finding people that are able to be comfortable in taking on those jobs. And that's why you see some of that increases in wages, as well as sign-on bonuses for the McMinimums that you see out there are indicative of these kind of paying a premium for the risk that people are going to take.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Distant Voices. Thank you to everyone who was a part of this episode, including the guests and Willamette Week Newsroom. Also, special thank you to AmpMusic.co and Heather Witte for the music that you heard on this podcast. For more great content, be sure to follow Dive by Willamette Week on all podcast platforms, join us Saturdays for our Dive podcast show, and follow along with Willamette Week's content at WWeek.com and on all social platforms. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.